What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, I do not favor punishing children for the actions of their parents, the president says. But we must also recognize that we are a nation of opportunity because we are a nation of laws. How the end of DACA is being framed as a legal matter, and how the Obama administration allowed that to happen. It's Wednesday, September 6th.
Good afternoon, everybody. This morning, Secretary Napolitano announced new actions my administration will take to mend our nation's immigration policy.
Peter Baker, what happens on June 15th, 2012?
Well, President Obama showed up in the Rose Garden of the White House that day to announce that he was taking an executive action,
specifically for certain young people, sometimes called dreamers,
that would establish a program for young immigrants who came here illegally and were brought to the country by their parents when they were children, when they were under 16.
They are Americans in their heart, in their minds, in every single way but one, on paper.
And for people who qualified, that meant that they were not going to be at risk of deportation, and they could apply for a work permit that would last for 2 years that would allow them to come out of the shadows, work legally, and not worry about getting in trouble with employers, and also leave the country and come back the way American citizens or American green card holders do.
Let's be clear. This is not amnesty. This is not immunity. This is not a path to citizenship.
And it's not even legal status because it was temporary. Each 2 years you had to get it renewed. But it was the closest thing to a legal status that any of these folks had ever had. And it was a big moment. 800,000 people were estimated to be affected by this. And it brought a lot of them into the light, in effect.
We have always drawn strength from being a nation of immigrants, as well as a nation of laws. And that's going to continue. And my hope is that Congress recognizes that and gets behind this effort. All right? Thank you very much, everybody.
A lot of us on the staff stood in the colonnade to watch him make the announcement.
Cecilia Munoz was President Obama's chief domestic policy advisor when he signed DACA.
A number of us went out there because we knew he was making history and we wanted to be there. It was a lovely sunny day. The president was excited to do this. We were thrilled that he was doing it. And I have a picture of this day, actually, in my office now that was signed by many of my colleagues. They gave it to me for my 50th birthday. And we all have a somber look on our faces, and that's because most of us are crying. It was a big emotional moment. This one was a little personal, frankly. I'm the daughter of immigrants. I'm the spouse of an immigrant. This stuff is personal to me.
Peter, I want to talk about what was going on leading up to that moment in the Rose Garden that brought President Obama to the decision to do this by executive action.
Yeah, immigration had challenged and vexed Washington for years by this point.
Well, a major immigration reform bill making its way through the Capitol Hill this week. The Senate hoping to approve the legislation before the 4th of July holiday.
And Democrats had long supported a comprehensive immigration plan that would allow many illegal immigrants to stay in the country and provide path to either citizenship or legal status for them. And a number of Republicans had supported similar legislation.
And that's why I support this reform. Not just because I believe in immigrants, because I believe in America even more.
But it had never gotten done. It constantly became polarized, in particular within the Republican Party.
And so I've called this the always is, always was, and always will be Amnesty Act, in that if you is in America illegally, you get amnesty and you get to stay. If you was in America and were deported, you get to come back.
And because of that, Washington had never been able to come up with a consensus view on how to go forward. It kept bogging down.
So Congress had never gotten close to doing something that was going to protect these young people from deportation.
Exactly. And the president for 3 years had urged them to do it.
And we should stop punishing innocent young people for the actions of their parents by denying them the chance to stay here and earn an education and contribute their talents to build the country where they've grown up.
He spent a lot of time, in particular in 2010, trying to get them to pass what was called the DREAM Act at the time.
The DREAM Act would do this. And that's why I supported this bill as a state legislator and as a U.S. senator, and why I continue to support it as president.
And that failed. And finally, you know, in 2012, which happened to be an election year,
right,
he used his executive authority to take action on his own, saying, I'm not going to wait for Congress anymore. And for years, by the way, he said he didn't have the authority to do that.
Now, I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own. With respect to the notion that I can just suspend deportations through executive order, that's just not the case.
But that's not how our system works.
So he knew well what the legal flaws in this process were.
He did, exactly. And look, it, you know, from the point of view of critics, the law says these people aren't here legally, and that the president of the United States doesn't have the right to circumvent the law in this view by simply saying, yeah, they're not here illegally, but I'm not going to enforce the law when it comes to these people. Now, among the critics was a senator from Alabama named Jeff Sessions.
Right.
A longtime critic of looser immigration policies. Now, there were other Republicans who complained about it but didn't really make a big protest because, in fact, they sympathized with the goals of the policy. But even they, I think, a lot of them found the way President Obama went about it troubling in a legal sense, that just because Congress refuses to pass a law does not mean the president ought to be able to do it by fiat. That was their view. So there are two issues here. There's the policy, whether we agree with the policy or not, and the legality. And what's tripped up President Obama here is that while a lot of people do support the goals of the policy, the legality has left it being very vulnerable. So strangely enough, come an election year, his Justice Department came up with a new legal interpretation that said, in fact, he did have that authority and he decided to use it.
Republicans attacked the president's plan before it was even announced. House Speaker John Boehner released his pre-buttal hours before the president spoke.
Instead of working together to fix our broken immigration system, the president says he's acting on his own. That's just not how our democracy works. The president had said before that he's not king and he's not an emperor, but he's sure acting like one.
And it's interesting that he did this right before he conceivably could have lost the White House.
That's right. Exactly. He was hoping to put it in place so that it would survive him if he did lose. I think his gamble was that if this was in place, President Romney, if he were to have won, wouldn't have undone it. He didn't know that for a fact. It was a gamble. But it was certainly a better gamble from his point of view than not doing anything. He's not wrong about that. Many presidents tend to leave in place the things that their predecessors do, even if they don't particularly support them. And President Romney, I think it's a good bet he might have left that in place because, again, these are a sympathetic portion of the overall illegal immigration population.
And then with regards to these kids who were brought in by their parents through no fault of their own, there needs to be a long-term solution so they know what their status is.
Cecilia, how aware were you and the president about the legal risks involved in doing this by executive action
We were very aware of the legal risks and, for that matter, the political risks. President Obama himself, the day he made the DACA announcement, said, this is less than I would like. I don't have the authority to do what really needs to happen here, which is to give these young people permanent status. Congress has to do that, and they have failed.
Precisely because this is temporary, Congress needs to act. There's still time for Congress to pass the DREAM Act this year because these kids deserve to plan their lives in more than two-year increments.
So after the 2016 election, President Obama pulls President Trump aside and says, please keep this program. This is important.
Yes.
And I wonder if you all thought, given that conversation and how much an investment President Obama had made into this, that DACA was somehow going to be safe.
We knew from the very beginning that some future administration could undo DACA, right? That was always true. Even the, you know, materials that the Department of Homeland Security put out to inform people about the opportunity to apply made it really clear what this was and what the risks were. That's our responsibility as a government, was to make sure people had accurate information about what they were signing up for. And look, nobody expects a friendly administration to be in place forever, although obviously nobody anticipated that we would be where we are now.
Good morning. I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded.
Okay, so let's fast forward to Tuesday, and now Attorney General Jeff Sessions rescinds this executive action, DACA.
It was inconsistent with the Constitution's separation of powers.
What did Attorney General Sessions say were his justifications for doing that?
Well, Attorney General Sessions was very clear. He said this is an unconstitutional program. There is no legality for it. A president cannot usurp the power of Congress, and that the program had to end.
The Department of Homeland Security should begin an orderly, lawful wind down, including the cancellation of the memo that authorized this program.
Now, of course, it actually is the president's decision to do this, President Trump's decision, but he had the Attorney General go out to explain it, which, of course, is very interesting.
It is.
President Trump didn't want to be the public face of this policy. Remember, earlier in his presidency, he said that...
I want to ask about undocumented immigrants who are here. Is there anything you can say to assure them right now that they'll be allowed to stay?
They shouldn't be very worried. They are here illegally. They shouldn't be very worried. I do have a big heart. We're going to take care of everybody. We're going to.
He said he had great heart for them. He wanted to treat them with great heart and compassion. So then coming out and being the public face of this turnabout was not something he wanted to do. He left it to Jeff Sessions to do that.
Why is this White House doing this right now?
Well, they're kind of up against a wall in terms of this lawsuit threat from the attorney generals of various states. These attorney generals had set Tuesday, September 5th, as a deadline for a decision to be made. Otherwise, they would be seeking a court order. And there was every reason to believe that the court might have been sympathetic to those attorney generals. Remember, these courts have already turned over part of President Obama's immigration policy when it came to adults. So if that was illegal, if that wasn't constitutionally based on his executive authority, then presumably the argument would go, neither is this program. And what the White House would say is that by making this decision and creating a phase-out type of program that still allowed Congress an opportunity to step in, they created a better, more orderly, and more compassionate result than simply letting a court strike it down and having all 800,000 people suddenly be here illegally again.
Now that he has ended this unsustainable and unconstitutional program imposed by the previous administration, the president is calling on the men and women in Congress to fulfill their duty to the American people by truly reforming our immigration system for the good of all people.
He's basically throwing it in Congress's lap, saying, you have 6 months to fix this. Otherwise, this politically tough result is going to go into effect, and it'll be your fault, not mine. In effect, the grenade has been tossed to the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue.
We have confidence that Congress is going to step up and do their job. This is something that needs to be fixed legislatively, and we have confidence that they're going to do that, and we stand ready and willing to work with them in order to accomplish responsible immigration reform, and that would include DACA is certainly part of that process.
There are many Republicans who believe that getting something on the Republican side is not going to be easy, that the divisions that we see between the center and the right in the Republican Party will become only deeper. What gives you confidence?
With all due respect, I don't think the American people elected Congress to do things that were easy. They elected them to make a government that works, to work properly, and to work for American people, and that's their job. And if they can't do it, then they need to get out of the way and let somebody else who can take on a heavy lift and get things accomplished. Major.
Sarah.
I mean, in theory, once this goes away and by October of 2019, the program is gone altogether, if Congress doesn't act, all 800,000 would be illegal and therefore, at least in theory, subject to deportation. Now, if you currently have one of these work permits and it's going to expire before the next 6 months, then you have 30 days to ask for it to be renewed. And it can be renewed. So you can go up for another 2 years staying in the country legally under this program. But anybody whose permit currently expires more than 6 months from now will just have to live out their permit and then they have to leave, or they have to, they're probably not going to leave, but they're subject to deportation and they can't have a legal work permit that they've been using for these last several years.
Undocumented! Undocumented!
Now, these people weren't priorities of deportations in the past for the most part, and most of them didn't actually face that possibility very often, but they knew it was there. It was always a possibility. If they got arrested for something else, they could be potentially deported, and they couldn't work in the country legally. So it's a big change for these 800,000, however it works out.
So what has it been like for you to watch President Trump rescind DACA?
For everybody involved in creating DACA, it's been incredibly painful to watch. And the thing that I struggle with the most is that I have yet to hear anyone articulate a reason that this is a good thing. Like, who does this help exactly? Nobody. And nobody's even making the argument that it helps anybody in this country.
Jeff Sessions is making the argument that it serves the Constitution. And you yourself have said that you all understood in the Obama administration that this was a legally risky and dubious strategy.
Well, we knew we would get sued, but we also knew that deferred action existed and was used in significant ways by Democratic and Republican presidents long before President Obama. And so we had some real confidence that it would withhold legal scrutiny. And the notion that the administration is somehow protecting the Constitution by putting these young people at risk, I just find ridiculous, especially from the administration that just pardoned Sheriff Arpaio, who was convicted of violating people's constitutional rights. It's pretty hard to take seriously the claim that this is about rule of law coming from this administration.
President Obama has put out a statement on Facebook. What's his reaction to his successor reversing what he regards as a key element of his legacy? He seems pained.
Of course he's pained. You can't know a dreamer and not be pained. These are people he knows, people he cares about, people whose contributions to this country he believes in. Of course he's pained. Anybody who is associated with his policy is pained. I have had former colleagues, when they left the administration, make an effort to reach out to me and say DACA was the favorite thing that we did, that they would take pride in for the rest of their lives. I have a hard time expressing my own pain about it because the pain of the dreamers is so much worse.
So going back to where we started, Peter, I wonder how much President Obama's approach to protecting these young undocumented immigrants, kind of not just what he did, but how he did it, ultimately sowed the seeds of this program's demise. He signed an executive action that worked around Congress. And then we saw the rise of Donald Trump campaigning against precisely that kind of liberal approach to immigration. And it turned out that the message resonated. Is there a case to be made that Obama, perhaps unwittingly, helped lay the groundwork for rescinding DACA?
Well, certainly he did. Absolutely. You reap what you sow. If you choose to live by executive power, then you're going to die by executive power because it's easily reversed. The minute one president leaves office, it's up to the next president to decide whether executive actions taken by his predecessors, you know, stay on the books or not. That's why it's better for any president who wants to create lasting change to get Congress to buy in, to get a vote of Congress, to get a bill sent, to get it signed into law, much, much harder to undo. And President Obama's inability, failure, or whether it's his fault or not, in his first years to get this through Congress meant that he turned to a form of governing that was always going to be vulnerable to the next president's decisions. Look, executive action is ephemeral. I mean, it's just not lasting. And that's why it's very attractive to every president to sit there and say, hey, with the, you know, sweep of a pen, I can change policy. I can make the country different. But it doesn't last. It doesn't necessarily last. And that's the vulnerability, the weakness, the fragility of that approach to governing. He would say, President Obama would say, he had no choice. Republicans were obstructionists. Mm-hmm. They refused to go along with him on Capitol Hill. He had to do this because it was the only way to make progress. But we do see today, from his point of view and the point of view of his supporters, there's obviously weakness to that.
Peter, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. It's always good to talk to you, Mike.
Okay, bye. We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for The New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray, and that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to The New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to know today. Just days after Hurricane Harvey devastated parts of Texas and Louisiana, another storm, Hurricane Irma, is strengthening over the Atlantic Ocean, threatening to hit the Caribbean as early as Tuesday night, and possibly southern Florida by the end of the week. The National Weather Service is calling Irma an extremely dangerous and potentially catastrophic Category 5 storm. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.